Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, November 7th, 2022. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern Time. If you're listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. Or if anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, it's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. Also, you can join our campaign for constitutional sheriffs. You also find that on our front page and on the right-hand side of our website. Okay, we're going to pick up where we left off last week. We're in our scripture reading. We're reading in the book of Romans. And let me see if I can find my way there. Let's go. Let's see. Is that it? No. It is okay. Romans chapter 9, read by Alexander Scorby. Was that chapter 8? Oh, it's chapter 9. Hang on a minute. I may not have that. I may have to go find that.
Chapter 9. I say the truth in Christ. I lie not, my conscience also bearing me witness in the Holy Ghost, that I have great heaviness and continual sorrow in my heart. For I could wish that myself were accursed from Christ for my brethren, my kinsmen according to the flesh, who are Israelites, to whom pertaineth the adoption and the glory and the covenants, the giving of the law and the service of God and the promises, whose are the fathers, and of whom, as concerning the flesh, Christ came, who is over all. God blessed forever. Amen. Not as though the word of God hath taken none effect, for they are not all Israel, which are of Israel. Neither because they are the seed of Abraham are they all children. But in Isaac shall thy seed be called. That is, they which are the children of the flesh, these are not the children of God, but the children of the promise are counted for the seed. For this is the word of promise. At this time will I come, and Sarah shall have a son. And not only this, but when Rebekah also had conceived by one, even by our father Isaac, for the children being not yet born, neither having done any good or evil, that the purpose of God according to election might stand, not of works, but of him that calleth, it was said unto her, The elder shall serve the younger. As it is written, Jacob have I loved, but Esau have I hated. What shall we say then? Is there unrighteousness with God? God forbid. For he says to Moses, I will have mercy on whom I will have mercy, and I will have compassion on whom I will have compassion. So then, it is not of him that willeth, nor of him that runneth, but of God that showeth mercy. For the scripture saith unto Pharaoh, Even for this same purpose have I raised thee up, that I might show my power in thee, and that my name might be declared throughout all the earth. Therefore hath he mercy on whom he will have mercy, and whom he will he hardeneth. Thou wilt say then unto me, Why doth he yet find fault? For who hath resisted his will? Nay, but, O man, who art thou that repliest against God? Shall the thing formed say to him that formed it, Why hast thou made me thus? Hath not the potter power over the clay, of the same lump to make one vessel unto honor and another unto dishonor? What if God, willing to show his wrath and to make his power known, endured with much long suffering the vessels of wrath fitted to destruction, and that he might make known the riches of his glory on the vessels of mercy which he had afore prepared unto glory, even us, whom he hath called, not of the Jews only, but also of the Gentiles. As he saith also in Ozi, I will call them my people, which were not my people, and her beloved, which was not beloved. And it shall come to pass that in the place where it was said unto them, Ye are not my people, there shall they be called the children of the living God. Esaias also crieth concerning Israel, Though the number of the children of Israel be as the sand of the sea, a remnant shall be saved. For he will finish the work and cut it short in righteousness, because a short work will the Lord make upon the earth. And as Isaiah said before, Except the Lord of Sabaoth had left us a seed, we had been as Sodoma and been made like unto Gomorrah. What shall we say then? That the Gentiles, which followed not after righteousness, have attained to righteousness, even the righteousness which is of faith. But Israel, which followed after the law of righteousness, hath not attained to the law of righteousness. Wherefore? Because they sought it not by faith, but as it were by the works of the law. For they stumbled at that stumbling stone, as it is written, Behold, I lay in Zion a stumbling stone and rock of offense, and whosoever believeth on him shall not be ashamed.
Okay, we got an open forum at this point going. Anybody wants to get into the Q&A session? It's if you're on phone, star 6 and 1. If you come in on an app, there should be a button to join the Q&A. Meanwhile, we'll first, Jen, do we have any questions or any announcements?
Yes, we do have one tonight, and that's all. Jen? Ready?
Yep.
It is, I was cited by my borough for a private criminal complaint by the code enforcement officer for an accumulation of debris. I had appealed to County Common Pleas Court for a hearing scheduled for January. Last Saturday, I received a certified letter for the exact criminal complaint again, which I appealed to the county court. I do not understand the nature and cause of the second same criminal complaint. Is de novo applicable in my situation?
What was that last part? Is what in his situation?
Is de novo, D-E, space, N-O-V-O, applicable in my situation?
Yeah, I'm not sure of that particular phrase. in any event, I guess the first thing we have to know is what court he's in. Does he say what state he's in?
He's in Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania. Okay, Pennsylvania. Well, you know, Pennsylvania is different than New York in the court system, the way they're set up.
Right.
I know in the Constitution here in New York State, the only courts of record are county courts, state courts, and that's it. You know, those are the courts of record. If it's a town court or a village court, they're not courts of record. So that's the first thing you want to check in on, probably the Constitution in the Pennsylvania, and see what are courts of record, and that's where I'd begin. If that court is not a court of record, then they don't have personam jurisdiction. And you can, you know, make that position. The other thing is, of course, it's a code violation. And now again, codes don't identify with us; it has nothing to do with us. So that's a whole different argument now. So if you're in a court that is a court of record, you can make that position, because that's set up for equity courts. Usually, you can find out on the violation on the ticket; it'll have a referral to a number or something, and give. Potentially, you know, what the code would be, and then you can probably trace it out from there and make your argument. But that's not enough information really for me to know exactly which direction you could take. And also, you know, I had a problem in my town here. I had a vehicle. I didn't have it insured. It was parked in my driveway, and they kept complaining about it. Eventually, they stopped complaining because I just ignored them. I was going to go down and argue with them, but I figured I'd wait for them to give me something written. They never did, so I didn't follow up on it. But who are they to tell me, you know, that I have to have? Oh, they wanted me to have put plates on them, so they wanted me to register and insure the vehicle. Towns could be a problem, and it's probably a town issue, I presume. I really don't know. Again, there's not enough information to make that decision or that understanding.
It sounded that way, John. It was the local code enforcement officer that gave him the ticket.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like, the town. So it's a personam jurisdiction. That's the argument to the case. Last week, I think I posted this up. If I haven't, I'll post it up soon, because I did do something for myself, and recently I assisted Gerard. I think that I may have put it up here on challenging personam jurisdiction in a court, not a record, which would be, again, a town or a village court. And let's see, let me see if I put it up on the site. And if I haven't, I'll try to get it up this week. I'll make a note, and I just have to remember to do that. Let's see, land patent, quo wanto. I don't think I put it up. Okay. Anyway, this page here has a lot of good information. The court forms, processes, and some instructions. It gives you instructions. I have never read this. I don't know if Gerard's got around to be able to read this. It did look pretty good. It's something to come to understand about land patents. The other thing, demand for oath and bond, and instructions and forms to challenge jurisdiction. And, I'd imagine I would have put it here, but I have a paper. Again, I'll put it up here, and maybe if someone reminds me next week, we'll talk a little bit about it. But it's a paper to challenge any kind of a code enforcement coming up against you. I use it particularly for traffic violation. And basically, it's a good form. All you have to do is make it yours by putting your specific information into it. So it's a pretty easy cookie-cutter kind of case. All right. With that, I guess if there's nothing else, there's no announcements or anything?
Nope, there's nothing else in terms of questions.
Okay, and there's no announcements, John?
I was going to look. There is an upcoming, the Red Pill Expo, November 12th and 13th in Salt Lake City.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a lot of good speakers. It should be a real interesting session. I think it's a two-day event, the 12th and the 13th. You can get information on the speakers and some little short renditions of what they're going to talk about by going to the redpilluniversity.org/expo, expo-homepage. And if you're going to be, or if you are in driving distance or otherwise of Salt Lake City, that would be something well worth attending. They always have a great slate of speakers, and they have them like three or four times a year. But they have a lot of good current stuff.
And the information on how people can get more information on that, was there a website or something?
Yeah, the website was theredpilluniversity.org/expo-homepage. It's in the newsletter. If you just go to newsletter and click on it, you should go right there.
Okay. And is that particular website, do they have any other plans for Red Pill Expos coming up in other areas?
They do. You'll find that on their webpage. I forget where the next one is.
I know when we were out at the Pennsylvania event a couple of weeks ago. I think it was it was 2 weeks ago. And we got some information on something that was going to be happening, I think, in Maryland. Are you aware of that also?
Yeah, that was the Reawaken America.
Mm-hmm.
And they had one in Branson here last weekend. They live streamed it, and they had much of the same information with some new things added that we heard 2 weeks ago, I guess it is now.
Yeah.
And they have one coming up in Maryland or Delaware, and they're trying to schedule one in Florida, but they haven't got that one scheduled. I think the Maryland one is already scheduled.
Right.
And you can probably find that under Thrive Time Show. That's THRIVE time, timeshow.org or .com. And you should be able to pull up the information on their Reawaken America tours. They call them Reawaken America Conference.
Okay.
I've got a list of all the past ones. They must be on number 22 or 3 or 4. They've done a lot of them.
All right. All right. I don't know. Maybe keep an eye, Terry. Maybe you can keep an eye out for Brent. See if Brent's coming. I haven't seen him in quite a few weeks. But
okay, will do. And I'll cut in if he comes in.
Okay. And maybe, Jan, maybe you can give a call to Gerard. I don't know if he's listening in. Let me see something here. Okay, yeah. Yeah, his mic is not. He doesn't have a mic on his or anything. You see that? Even when you go put your cursor up on his name. Anyway, give him a call because he may not be listening at the moment and let him know that he doesn't have a mic turned on. He's going to have to bail out and come back in. Maybe his mic is out of socket or maybe he didn't click that button when he came in. I don't know. So, okay, with that, we'll get going. We're going to go straight to Q&A tonight. Again, we have a few people in the queue right now. Anybody else wants to get into the queue? Again, if you're coming in on phone, star 6 and a 1. And if you're coming in by app, there should be a button to come in. So we'll take our first call. It looks like I don't have a name, but someone calling in from California. Vista, California? You got the mic. What's your first name?
Yes, hi, John. This is Laurent. I think that you may have answered the question. Last week, I was driving in my neighborhood and got pulled over by a code enforcer, highway patrol, and I have a good driving record. They want me to appear in court on December the 21st, and I just wanted to know, I have the government by consent book. I just recently got the court access common law. Can you direct me to where I can find some paperwork so I can get this dismissed?
Yeah, well, I got some updated paperwork. In the court access in the common law, there should be something on a traffic violation. I'm sure I put something in there on that. I'm going to kind of breeze through this a little bit as I'm talking, and or maybe when if I don't get it before you get off the mic here, then once I see it, I'll let you know what I can find. But what I'm going to put up is very close to what I've got in the book, but it's updated. It's got a little bit of a different perspective to it, or a strategy, shall I say, kind of a little bit of a different strategy that I've added to it. It's a couple of papers, and it's also a position, and it's also an argument. So I believe that's what I have, is a paper that you can make some arguments with in court. And of course, the first paper that you want to file, which is a challenge of jurisdiction. And I write up the process on how to file that. Generally, basically, you have to file it not only with the court, but you have to serve a copy on to the prosecutor. And to find out who that is, you should be able to get that information by just calling the courthouse and talking with the clerk and finding out who is what's the name of the prosecutor for these cases. And usually they should be able to give you an address where you can then send them a paper. It's important that you get a copy to that prosecutor. They're not going to respond to it, at least not in writing. And the judge is not going to, maybe not even be aware of it when you come into the court. At least I know here in New York they ignore everything you send in by paper. As a matter of fact, they even send it out. But whatever the case may be, if it's been removed, again, there's a position or an argument that needs to be made in the court to make these people aware that that's a crime, then they shouldn't be doing that. But that clerk created a crime. And if the judge required that clerk to remove that paper, that's a crime, too. The one crime, I believe it's up to 2 years, and if the judge, pushes his, pushes his clerk to remove it from the file and return it or throw it away or whatever. Okay, that's up to 20 years in jail. So it's a pretty serious crime, remove papers. And these people do it all the time. No one challenges this on them. And but that's one of the things I definitely made aware of when I was in court the last time. And they were not too happy with me, but, I was really pretty much saying that you committed criminal activity here. But in any, and they threw my case out, and that was that. And that's all you're looking for is to have your case thrown out. You're not looking to cause trouble or anything, push anything like that. But the point is, it's still something that is written down on the law. It's a federal law, and that applies in all courts, that you cannot remove papers. The clerk is required to file and pursue it through, and paperwork needs to take its course through the judicial system. And anybody who stops that makes it a crime. So that's one thing. The other thing is, you know, if you don't really get anywhere, and, you know, again, another position. I think I wrote some of these notes down. I'm pretty sure I did. If I don't, maybe I'll write some notes down in this idea that we're talking about right now. But when you go into court, you know, the other thing you might want to do is, again, if they're ignoring your paperwork and they didn't respond, another position that is being made is that, look, at the judge, you have no other choice but to throw this case out because you put in a sworn affidavit, and that affidavit has not been challenged. And so, therefore, there's no case here. You can only rule on what's before the court. You can't go any further outside of that because the prosecutor will never answer in paper. I mean, I'd be very surprised if they did. They can't make a position against the law anyway. The other thing is if they still don't want to let you go, they'll try to reschedule. You let it be known that, look, if you reschedule, we're going to federal court. And, you know, I have a paper in that, how to move it to federal court for cause. And it's the denying of due process. That's the key point that you're going to bring it into federal court. So at that point, you're suing for money. But also the other position is you want to give them what's called a quo warranto, which is a paper up against the government. In this case, this the judicial system, the courthouse, the judge, and the prosecutor. And the quo warranto is really a challenging them and requiring that they give you a copy of their bond, their oath, and their financials. And so I would have that kind of in my back. I didn't have it when I went to court last time. It's something I thought about later on, but it's part of my new process, part of my process. That I will have that in my back pocket with the judge's name on it and the prosecutor's name off, ready to serve them on the record right there in court. And I think it's 11 days. The paper says how much time they have to respond to that. So you get 11 days. So anyway, if you quiz me again on this next week, I'll be able to identify the location of the paperwork on the website. So I'll make a note to put it up. And again, while I'm taking the next question or I get some breaks here, I'll see what I can find in the book, and I'll just make a note that where it might be found. So, and I'm just going through real quick on the index here because I imagine I should see it very quickly before we need the next call. Let me just quickly go through that. Memorandums. Yeah, I'm not seeing it very quickly. I'll have to look through it when I get a chance. All right, with that, anything else?
No, that's great. I appreciate you. Thank you.
Okay, thanks for the call. All right, we'll take our next person. Looks like David from New York. You got the mic, David?
Negative. I removed myself from the queue there, John. But something that came up earlier, were there any sort of updates to government by consent to the book or your latest book?
On government by consent, it's pretty much the same. There might have been a few changes I made in that book, nothing major or anything, maybe a few corrections, things that I found afterwards. I might have added a little bit, not much of anything, but just a little bit in the government by consent when I turned it over to a hard copy. The paperback is still the same, unchanged. And of course, the other book, Court Access and the Common Law, you know, I just published that and there's been no changes yet. If anybody finds any errors in those books, you might want to let me know and I can try to update those books. And hey, did you get a copy of the booklets yet that I had mailed out?
Yep, got the copies. Fantastic book, going over it. Great information. Appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Okay. All right. Anything else, David? I guess you didn't have anything, right?
No, just was concerned about the updates, you know, if there was anything, corrections or things that were pointed out to you that you would like to have added in that you want to let us be informed on.
Yeah, and I try to do that on Monday calls, any kind of an update. You know, look at as you live and you learn, you know. We're all growing and we continue to grow and you kind of find a new strategy or something that makes things a little better and you add on to it. And, of course, from time to time you find error and you make those corrections and you move along. I don't know that I have any errors in the book. I'm sure there's probably something in there that could be done better. But we'll make those changes and post them pretty much up here on this page. I know on the books that's going, you know, that I'm doing on the hard copy books, which is sold up on Amazon, those books are pretty easy for me to correct. I wouldn't say that easy, but, you know, I could do it pretty simply, you know, a couple hours of work and I can re-upload and reset a chapter or make changes and so on and so forth. So if I find any errors or things that could be written better, you know, I'll just make notes of it and make the corrections on the original, you know, book that I'm writing on my Microsoft Word and eventually update the book and let everybody know. But again, anything that I'm adding that has some good value to it that people might want to know or should know, I'll probably put on this page here. And this page is found under educational. Let me see. Education starts here, come down to the law, and then when you highlight the law, you'll come over to court forms and process. It's the third one down at that point. But this is the only page on the website. Let me think. Yeah, this is the only page on the website. This and the government by consent course that requires you to be a premium member. And a premium member is someone that is donating $5 a month or more. And that makes you a premier member that helps to support NLA. And then we give access to that page, the court forms and process, and, of course, access to the government by consent course. All the other courses, by the way, are free. And we've got quite a few courses up here, as many know. If you highlight courses underneath Education Starts Here, you can see the Foundation Study, Constitutional Course 101, a civics course, a government by consent course, that's the one that you have to be a premium member, free militia course. We also offer certificates of completion. Matter of fact, I see a couple of people have put in for some certificates and haven't gotten around to them yet. And I don't know how long ago it was done. You didn't get them yet because I haven't had the opportunity. I just got my computer up last week and I'm still kind of playing around with some bugs in it. But I've been down pretty much, not getting much of anything done for about a month. But I'll get those certificates out. But anyway, people can get a certificate of completion. And I don't know why the civics course is up here twice. And then there's the jury administrators course, which is an accredited course. Okay, I'm just looking to see why this is up here twice. I don't know why that is. I'll have to investigate this. All right, anyway. Anything else?
Nope, I'm all set. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. All right, we'll take our next person, next question. Ross, how you doing? You got the mic.
Hello. I wondering of about the... We need to fix some of the stuff in the land patent situations. That should we do that in the community of safety to fix that, those land patent stuff problems?
Absolutely. We shouldn't have to go through anything like that to make that repair. Also, I believe it could be done by going down and trying to force them to move your property out of residential. Because I think when you're in residential, you're brought into that tax bracket because it's a game they play with words, the word residential. You're a resident. You know, to have your property moved into under the category of private property, and I think that can solve the solution altogether. And, of course, there's no real paperwork that needs to be done with that. Going through the land patent, there is a process. First, the book talks quite a bit about land patents and it gives you an understanding of it, and then a process on what you need to do to have it removed out of the system from identifying you really ultimately as a resident, okay? Because you're not really the owner of the property. And you're just granted, you know, like a lord would grant a serf the control over a piece of property. That's pretty much how it's set up, and that's how it's set up and was set up in England. I don't know what's up in England right now, but that's what the way it was. And that was transferred over to us early on in the colonies, and that's how things worked. However, you know, and again, I don't have much knowledge of this, but again, I'll be quizzing Gerard on that to see if he got around to be able to read through that book and give us some thoughts and maybe even maybe talk.
Because I was thinking about, we need to get rid of the marketable title.
You need to get rid of what?
Marketable title.
Oh, well, absolutely. There's a lot of things that have to be changed. Now that I'm back working again, I'm working on numerous things, and it's hard to figure out which to do first. But you know, but I do have a plan layout on our final paper into the courts up against the United States Supreme Court in our lawsuit against the federal judiciary. We've pretty much got plenty of proof showing that there is a conspiracy, and they've been working together. They commit the same crime in California as they do in New York or Texas or any place else.
State of Oregon?
Oregon, every state, the federal courts act the same way. They do the same thing, and they break the same law, and they do it in the same way. and so, you know, we're going to lay that out pretty clear now that we have, because we got a lot of papers that we filed into the courts, and also the removal of our papers and the ignoring of our case, the resistance of our case, many things. But we're going to be pursuing many, many issues, because we've lost our courts of justice, and that is the key. The key must be the United States Supreme Court must acknowledge the fact that that we have lost our courts of justice, and it needs to be returned. They have to acknowledge, and we're going to be looking for declaratory judgments in this area. And we'll let it be known, if they don't want to give us declaratory judges, then we're going to sue them directly, and we'll get a grand jury, we'll get a trial jury going in here, and let the people decide. But I don't think, you know, the timing has to be right. I don't want to be too early on filing this particular paper, because we're still on this side of devolution. I'd rather be, and when devolution is really hot and heavy, you know, the military is making its move, things are happening, which by the way, I have updated. I see that Terry has updated some of the recordings that we put up under today's issue, coming down under the Q News, the Q News Anon. And I just published a paper today, or posted, not a paper, but a video today, which is S.G. Anon, that's the individual S.G., who's an Anon, sits down with this guy David Rodriguez. And I haven't even been able to listen to all of this yet. I only got about a third of the way through, but tomorrow morning maybe I'll try to listen to this. But anyway, it's an update here on that information. We are very, very close, okay? I also, over the weekend, I think it was, let me think, yeah, it was probably Friday or Saturday, I don't remember, I posted audio number 23. And I know 22, 20, and 21... 21 and 20, I think, was put up. Terry put that up while my computer was down. So we're up to date with all of these audio files. So we've got 23 audio files, and then we have this one here with an interview with the Anon here, which is pretty fast. So far, pretty fascinating. And again, I've only listened to about a third of it. According to him on this interview, arrests have already begun. They're just not on the big side yet. Although he claims certain arrests that have been taken by people, you know, certain big wigs, so to speak. But again, people need to take a look and listen in, see what's going on. And he feels that there's a good chance. He's not saying he's got information on this, but he feels pretty strong that something big may happen tomorrow. which is the eighth, and you know, it could be a nuclear scare. It could be a lot of things. Even the elections may not even go forward for some reason or another. And this isn't an absolute. This is something that he kind of suspects or feels might happen. So something big might happen tomorrow.
Yes, I heard they sent a couple of the Justice Department sent a couple of notices to a couple of states like Texas and Louisiana or whatever. They will have Department of Justice people at the polling places to watch over the elections.
Yeah, the problem is we can't trust the justice people. We can't trust the FBI. We can't trust any of these people. The NSA, they're non-trustworthy. And I would say, you know, probably the people on the lower level might have good intentions, but it's the people on the upper level that prevent anything from really happening, or things that are found, you know, they'll squash them. So we really can't trust them. But I do believe, I am convinced, and Anand's pretty convinced on this. This guy, S.G. Anand, is convinced that the military is right on top of this. And so there's going to be military eyes and ears on elections throughout this entire nation. That's what I'm hearing. And they're going to let him go and let him do their dastardly deeds again, and you know, and then they'll be called on it.
That's like Merrick Garland is the one who's threatening this, the red states.
Mm-hmm.
I think we should stop calling them blue states or red states.
Well, that is a major problem we have in this nation, and it's an attitude problem that people are going to have to change with these party systems, because, you know, we cannot continue and go forward with a natural law republic with two-party system or any kind of a party system. There is no party. The purpose of a party is to debate and argue and one side trying to get over on the other side. That's not how a republic works. We've already put forth the law. We've already laid down the requirements. We've told them what their jobs were on every issue. And it's found in the Constitution, a very simple, thin booklet. But it lays out their powers, their authorities, what we've vested them with. And you know, what they can do and whatever's not in there, they can't do. So it's that simple. So we don't need them to reinvent any of these things. We don't need them to get up and debate about gun laws or any of those things. The Second Amendment is clear. We don't need them to make any debate or argument on the First Amendment. The First Amendment is clear. Everything is really clear. And if there is a need to add some additional things to the Constitution, then that's up to the people to really press forward and push upon. It's not for the you know, the people who have been elected as our elected servants to get involved in that. And by the way, any of these people that are using their political positions, their elective offices, in order to create a platform, in order to get rid of, for instance, one of our unalienable rights, like the right to defend ourselves, the Second Amendment, that's a crime. And it's clearly a crime written in U.S. codes. So that... you know, we're going to make that clear in the court cases also. But the bottom line is people need to really start to get educated. You know, I keep going back to this over and over again, and I can't say it often enough, and it's what Jefferson said, and if the people expect to be ignorant and free, they expect what never was and never will be. So we're not going to have, you know, the military could take this nation back. The military can give it back to the people. But if the people sit on their hands and decide not to get up to do their duty, liberty is not without work. It's not free. It costs something. It costs your time. And people need to get active on a grassroots level. That's why we push our committees of safety. And that's the only way it could be done. Now, we don't need everybody to get involved in this. Shame on the people that don't. But shame on us if we don't press the educational system to really get these things taught in school, so every child grows up understanding that they have a duty to give back. They have a duty to be to respond to what's going on in their community, and to make sure and to watch to make sure that liberty is not lost, that the violations are not happening. It's a duty for all of us. So we need to train our children that. So it's really something that's going to take some time to get down to, you know, the populace. That could take generations. But for right now, again, we don't have government by the majority. We have government by the majority that participates. So we only need, you know, a few hundred people at most in each county across the nation in order to, and that'll be a very, very small percent of 1% of the population in order to take control. But I got to believe that it will become very popular because once you get a committee that's active and you've created all of your subcommittees and you're active in your educational process, you're active in what's going on in the political process, making sure statesmen are put into office and that they're doing their job and not breaking the law and abusing their powers. Same thing with the courts. We have to have a judicial committee, a judiciary committee, a political committee, an educational committee, a committee of correspondence, and many, many other committees. So when people have a problem and they discover that there is a committee of safety, which is the people themselves, that can fix these problems, they'll start to gravitate towards that, and the word will get out, and you know, one person tells another, and the word of mouth will get out to a lot. Unfortunately, a lot of people are lazy. We've been trained that way. We've been trained that way in school. It's gotten worse. People don't read no more, and that's a huge, huge problem. And that's one of the things we need to fix in our schools. We have to bring books back into our schools. Look at as far as computers are concerned, we should have a course on computers, of course. You know, there should be a 45-minute course, you know, every day maybe, or however they work it out, throughout all of education, so people can grow in knowledge of the computer and a proper use of a computer and how you can use the computer to really benefit our republic and enrich yourself and educate yourself and all these other things. But using computers for everything is damaging our children. Our children are not learning books. And it's too much easy. It's too easy to control the minds of our children if they're running just through computers. And we also don't know what our children are being taught. And I've seen this in school with my nephew and the problems that really occur because of computers. Children shouldn't be in school with these smartphones. They should not be allowed in schools. There's no excuse for that. They need a phone. They can go down to the office if there's an emergency or a need to call their parents for some reason. You know, they'd be excused from class, go down to the office and make a phone call if it's necessary. They don't need their phones in schools. It's a distraction. It injures other children. There's all kinds of problems. I don't even have to get into it. But all people know is how to tweet. You go past two or three sentences, they're off on someplace else. And so we're training people. The people are being trained by these smartphones, by these tweetings, by all of these different social medias. They're being destroyed, and they don't even see it. They don't even understand it. And their children are being destroyed, and their children are destroying other children. It's a total mess out there. And the only way that's going to be solved is for the people to solve it themselves, community by community. And once certain communities start to take control of their education and control of what their children could do and can't do, whether it be in school or out of school, when you get a community that can do that, I think you're going to see a community that's going to rise above the other communities. And then the other communities are going to say, wow, you know, over here, things look a lot better than where I'm at, and wonder why that is. And that's how it happens. That's the only way it can happen. You know, we can't do this by force. We can't do any of these things by force. The only thing we could do by force is require that these people that we elected and put into certain positions, or people that are hired by these people who are elected or appointed by these people elected, that they don't break the law. And once they break the law, we need to come down on them then like a ton of bricks. Now, of course, in many cases, it may be done by ignorance, and we'll give them a little rope and let them know, hey, you got to stop doing this or stop doing that. And as long as they change from those ways as time goes on, you know, if not, then we have the power to remove them from office. We can remove people from office in one of two ways, but only when we take control of our local communities through committees of safety. We can remove these people either by, if it's something where they broke the law, violating their powers and authorities, we can indict them. That's one way. The other thing is we can recall them. We can get rid of an appointed individual very, very easily by all we have to do is know who appointed them. You know, what office, what person in what office had the power, the authority to appoint this individual? And so if this individual isn't obeying the people, you go to the person who appointed them and you let it be known, hey, we're going to go after you. You got to control these people. You chose this person. You have the power of hiring, so to speak, by appointing them. You have the power to take them out. Go correct the person. If you don't correct them, then we're going to take you out. And so we can then do recalls, which we can move anyone out of office within 90 days. People don't know these things. And that's why we have such a mess, you know. People are arguing and debating things that they need not to debate and argue. And you know, we don't have to try to prove to people who don't understand these things anything. We just have to take control because, again, we have government by a majority that participates, not the majority of the people. So if they want to get involved, let them participate. And in order for them to participate, they're going to have to get educated. And when they get educated, they're going to see the error of their way, with the exception of people who are just criminally minded or sociopaths or psychopaths. You know, those individuals, they'll always continue in their manipulations and whatever it is that they want to do. And they'll be identified. But look, you know, we don't have a majority of those kind of people. Most people are reasonably decent, reasonably anyway. So anyway, I guess that's it. Anything else, Ross?
I think we need to get the politicians on notice to be... Because, like, I did submit a 10th Amendment petition to Congress to get my sovereignty back.
Mm-hmm.
But that's
not going to go anywhere, as I'm sure you know. We have to take it back, and that's what we're doing in the courts.
Yes.
Your people have to get behind what we're doing in the courts. They need to get educated on what we're doing in the courts. And most importantly and more importantly than that, they need to get involved in committees of safety in their county. Just bear in mind, look, all politics is local. Just think about that. All politics is local. First of all, senators are not, let's just look at the federal level. Senators are not to be elected by the people. That should be elected. Those people should be put in place by the legislators of that state. I think generally speaking, it would be work where the governor would say, hey, he or she would pick an individual to be a senator, but it's the legislators that make the decision. Okay, and when a legislator sends someone to Washington as a senator, if they don't do the will, they can pull that person out at any time and send someone else. They don't have to wait for elections because they don't do elections that way. It's all done through legislation, and it's done through the deciders of the legislators within that state. So that needs to go back, and that's one of the things we're going to be fighting in court. That's one of the primary things we want to fight, is to get rid of the 17th Amendment, which is an abomination to the rest of the Constitution. It's a destruction of the balance of power because the states have lost their sovereignty since the 17th Amendment has been around and taken that power and authority. So they have no say on what the federal government does because they don't control their senator. They have no control over them. So we need to give it back and then the states sovereign again.
Yeah.
But on the other side, yeah, just let me finish this one point on being local, because this is key. We have to understand this. You know, in every county, we have our congressmen. You know, some congressmen, of course, will be in numerous counties, and you work together on that. But the bottom line is we have a local representative in Washington, one person, and it's a congressman. And that's the person that we make sure is obeying the law, understands the Constitution, and is really a statesman and not a political animal. So that's the key thing. As far as Washington is concerned, as far as our local community is concerned and our state, then we have all those other people that are elected. You see, all politics, all political processes are local. And when we control enough, you know, if we can control 80% of the Congress by having 80% of the counties that are electing their congressmen, having committees of safety, we just took back the entire congressional system. And that starts when we control 50%, you know, 51%. So when we get half the counties in America to that point, then we've got a good control on our government as a whole on a federal level. But there's also judicial things we can do. when these people get out there to do things that they shouldn't be doing. And on the other side of devolution, we definitely, and we'll probably have to do this for a while, we'll have to go after these individuals filing criminal complaints against people that are using their political positions in order to destroy our unalienable rights, such as the Second Amendment, the First Amendment, or any of our unalienable rights, by using their platform, their position, and their political positions in order to overthrow the Constitution. Okay, because that's what they're doing when they get out there and try to create gun laws. They're overthrowing the Constitution. And that is an absolute 100% crime written on the books. So we need to apply that. And I'm surprised that nobody has really seen that before and has done anything about that. But that's what we need to do. And so we need to take control. It's the people who have to do this. Mm-hmm. But go ahead, Ross.
I was just saying, we could do a constitutional convention to review the Seventh Amendment.
No, we don't need a constitutional convention. That would be a very dangerous thing to do in today's environment.
No, I was saying the Republic Review, that's what he... DR is talking about is a constitutional review for a Republic Review.
Oh, yeah, the Republic Review, absolutely, which we're involved with. We are involved with a Republic Review. But we don't need to really wait for a Republic Review for some of these things. For instance, the 17th Amendment is null and void on its face for two reasons. The main reason is that it is repugnant to the Constitution. It is in opposition. It totally... People need to understand this, and I wrote a paper on this, and maybe I got to make this clearer. I think I did a memorandum. I need to do a paper to make it maybe more clearer. I think the paper actually I wrote is clear. But the bottom line is this. Look, these people, okay, when they've taken and created the 17th Amendment, they destroyed the balance of power. There is a balance of power between the state, okay, and the federal government, and the people, and so you have the three branches. There's a balance there, and then of course there's the state and the people. So there is a balance of power between all that, and the ultimate power is in the people, but the people don't know it. They don't know how to exercise it. And that's of course what we teach here at National Liberty Alliance, is how to exercise those powers, how to bring it down to the grassroots and use it and do what we have to do. So anyway, that balance of power has been totally affected, and it violates numerous places in the Constitution. Let me see if I can pull one up real quick. Article 4 of the Constitution.
And also, the Article 5, senators are the equal vote thing for the senators.
Yeah, that's the Article 5. That's the one that I'm talking about. You're absolutely right. And let me just read part of that. We don't need to read all of it. It's Article 5 of our Constitution. And provided that no amendments which may be made prior to the year 1008. Hold on, let me get effect clause. Oh, here it is. Okay. And no state without its consent shall be deprived of its equal suffrage in the Senate, which is their equal vote. So the states must have an equal vote in the Senate, and the only way they can have that is if they control their senators. They don't control the senators. The people, you know, it's gone up to popular vote. And that's how dumbed down we were even way back then, what they've done behind the scenes, so to speak. But the people have been dumbed down so much they don't realize that the power and the authority of the states in the federal government, controlled by the states, is not there anymore. So that balance of power has been broken. You see, because this is a big debate that took place. And if you go read the Federalist Papers and the Anti-Federalist Papers, it's very important that the states have a certain power, that they have a certain say what's going on. Besides the people, the legislators had to have that power. And that's why they created the two houses, the Senate, which is controlled by the states, and the Congress, which is controlled by the people. So if the people were to do something stupid and make a mistake, the Senate can shut it down. Okay, and if the Senate would do something stupid and try to go forward, the people can shut it down because you got the both houses. That's the purpose of the both houses. So concessions were made, and a very, very well constructed plan, and which is really the Constitution, was put together. You know, we have a copy. If people haven't done this, you know, I've got a copy of the Federalist Papers. It's on MP3. Okay, and we post it up online. You can have access to it. I'm trying to see where we put it. I think it's under American History. Yeah, under American History. Educational starts here. You come down American History, and you highlight that, and you come over, and there's the Federalist Papers and the Anti-Federalist Papers. Now, the Federalist Papers, we have a copy of that in PDF, so you can read it, okay? But we also have all of the MP3s. We have a layout of the Federalist Papers breaking down, to, you know, really all the parts of the different, of each part, what do they call it, I don't think they call anything like Federalist 10, Federalist 9, number 1, whatever. But we have a breakdown of that. And we also have a breakdown of the Anti-Federalist Papers, and we also have that in MP3. So you can quickly go through this. The importance of the Union, for instance, is covered in number 1 through 14. I think there's some exceptions in there. The defects of the Articles of Confederation is found between 15 and 22. Arguments for the type of government contained in the Constitutions, Articles 23 through 36. You have the Republican form of government, 37 through 51. You have legislative branch, 52 through 66. The executive branch, 67 through 77. The judicial branch, 78 through 83. And the conclusions and miscellaneous ideas, 84 and 85. Okay, so you can kind of get in here and start taking a look at things, you know, from a topical position. But what I suggest, and this is what I've done, is I've got this these MP3s on a thumb drive. And in my car, you know, my radio, I can plug in a thumb drive, and I have a music thumb drive, but then I can put in a thumb drive which just has the Federalist Papers on it. And you can listen to the thumb drive when you're driving, especially when you're on a long trip. Or you can plug it into your MP3 player or whatever and just listen to them throughout the day. There's a lot you can pick up just by listening to this stuff over and over and over and getting the debates and understanding, you know, the problems and the situations and how our country was put together. That's discovered in the Federalist Papers. And the Anti-Federalist Papers also, because that's the second part of that, which gave us the Bill of Rights. And that was led, even though Madison was a major player in the Federalist Papers, he was also a major player. Him and Jefferson was a major player in the Anti-Federalist Papers. But Jefferson also was a major player in the Federalist Papers through Madison, James Madison. But go ahead.
Do you have read the ratification debates?
Which debates?
The ratification debates by the states.
No, I don't have that, no.
Yeah,
I'm not familiar with that. If you have information on that, I've not looked into that. Maybe you can email it to me. Just send it to mail. Mail at National Alliance.
I haven't read it yet because it's like $95 to just buy it.
I'm sure we can find it online. If we can't find it online and we can't find it in PDF form online, then I'd frown a little bit about that because this is who we are as a people. This information is free stuff and should be free stuff, and it should be old enough that you know there should be no problem getting this for free. Now I can see how it's being put in a book. I'm doing a paper. I'm doing a book on the Federalist Papers, and I'm doing a book on the Anti-Federalist Papers. It's going to be a long time before I really get through all that because it's a lot of work. And I'll do some commentary on that. But I'm really putting it together for the sole purpose, really, of getting it into the schools because the children should know and break it up into subject matters. I'm also doing the same thing on the harmony of the Gospels. And I've been working on that for a while now. And that's something I'm really interested in. But that's all free. You can get that free. But, you know, when people work to put it together and you want to get it in a book form and seen from a different position, then you could put it in a book and put it out there and people will buy it. And that's fine. You're giving them a different perspective of seeing something and looking at something. And maybe that's what these books that you're thinking about is doing. And what we want to do is get to the raw material, if it has any validity to it, and then see once how that played out in the creation of this nation.
See, because the state ratification debates are the ones that define Article 1, Section 8, Section 9, and Section 10 of Article 1. And that.
Well, look, you see, again, that is helping us then from a different perspective, and I understand that. Someone is doing really commentary on the papers, and I can appreciate that, but people should be very much weary and very much aware to be careful about that. I don't want to say weary, but to be careful about that, because remember, people have opinions, and the opinion that an individual has may not be correct, and they may guide you or push you, especially if you're new in something. They may kind of sway you in this direction or sway you in that direction. And what I would say, look, at before you really get deep into anything, and this is true about anything, I'll give you a position, particularly from the Bible. The most important thing a person can do is just read it. That's the most important thing. Read. Because as you read through it, you become familiar with it, and a lot of things will open up. Now you can look at commentary, and commentary should be separated from the Bible itself. And that should be true with anything, really. It's kind of separate. It's something over here, and you're looking at it from a different perspective. And what's the perspective? What's the position? What's the point? What's the conclusions? And then how do you think they really line up with what you've read? So we don't want to just take things that are read, that are written, and just go along with following the logic and just agreeing with that logic without really furthering our perspective on what we're looking at. Hopefully I'm making sense here when I'm trying.
Yeah, I think I was saying, because this is not anything commentary-wise on the ratification debates. It's actually the original writings of the people who were at debates.
Okay, so that should be free. I can understand people put in a book and charge for it. That's fine. You know, I'm doing some things like that again with the Federalist Papers and with the Gospels and so on. But still, it's for free. And anything I do is for free anyway, because you'll find it, with the exception of I guess in the books, which is tremendously large. You know. But if you have all my handbooks, for instance, are freely gotten as PDFs online. You don't have to buy them. But if people want to buy that handbook for $5, $6, $7 so that they can stick it in their shirt pocket or something, or their coat pocket and carry it around, or their back pocket, you know, then that's fine. And that's why I put it out there. And it also helps, of course, to support NLA. We don't make a lot of money on that, but we make a few dollars, and it supports what we're doing. So if you get me the information, I'll see if I can search out to get the raw material way back when, and we'll put it up on a line. Again, if you look up our educational tabs here with our courses, our American history, look at all the stuff we have, American history literature, lectures. We have Christianity in America, the Federalist Papers, the Anti-Federalist Papers, the Founding Fathers and political parties, founding documents, biographies, autobiographies, Continental Congress 2009, the 5,000-year leap. And if anybody hasn't read the 5,000-year leap, you know, that book is freely given in PDF form, and we have that up on our line right here. And we also have 5,000-year leap in audio. So our audio is the 5,000-year leap. We have the Anti-Federalist Papers audio, the Federalist Papers and audio, and we have some other things. We have articles and essays, a trial by jury, articles and many articles and essays, the Battle of Chelsea Creek. Let's see, on this articles and essay page, just look at all the materials and information we have here. Okay, we have so many. These are all free PDF books. Okay, and now some of these books, again, a couple of them that I mentioned, I want to put it in a book form to get it out there And most of it I'm doing for the sole purpose of getting them into textbooks to get into the schools. Because our children, why shouldn't we have not learned about the debate that created this great nation of us? Why haven't we learned about the debate that took place in the Federalist and the Anti-Federalist papers in school? How come we haven't heard that? Why isn't it in our school? Why isn't common law and how where common law comes from and how it was constructed and brought together and how it is that we became a nation of common law? How come that's not in our schools? How come our Constitution isn't in our schools? You know, you go to law school, you don't study the Constitution. You'll study law. You'll study equity, codes and regulations and different things maybe. But they don't really teach you much of anything concerning the Constitution. And that's the foundation of our whole system. The Constitution is it. That's our real law. So we need to get this stuff back into schools, and we need to learn it ourselves. And it's a lifelong education. You know, we're not going to learn this in weeks or months. We have to be, look, we should be spending some time reading, and we should be making a lot of our reading things that are really important to us in life, like who we are as a people, what is our heritage, how do we control our nation, you know, how do we control our federal government, how do we control our state government, how do we control our local government, how do we require them to be obedient, how do we control the courts? These are the things we need to know, because that is precisely government by consent. But you can't consent to something you don't understand and you don't know and you don't know how to consent. You can't do it. So anyway... We're trying to wake the people up with that. All right, Ross, I got to move on to the next person. Thank you. Gerard, if you're here and you want to take the mic, let me know. I see you here with no audio. You're going to have to reboot or whatever, come back in to get audio. All right, let's go to our next caller here. Next question is Jim from Pennsylvania. How you doing, Jim?
Hi, John. A couple comments and questions for you.
Yeah.
First of all, I received the handbooks that you had mailed me. I hope that you had received the check that I sent you.
Yeah, I don't recall whether I did. When did you send it out?
It was over the weekend, I think.
No. Oh, okay. Yeah, I probably haven't. I don't recall getting it yet, but I'll look to see if I did. I don't know.
Okay. Let's see. The other thing I was wondering. At one point, you had that's right. I had invited you to do a live stream
right.
on Friday and Saturday at the Constitution Party meeting in Nevada this
right.
weekend.
This weekend?
It was this Friday and Saturday, the 11th and 12th, I believe it is, yeah.
Yeah, I know we spoke about that, but I didn't know it came up yet.
Yeah, it'll be on the 11th and 12th this week. And I had not got response from anybody, from the secretary or the chairman, so I probably have not, the arrangements have not been made. So can I call you if at the last minute it is approved to have you do a live stream? Because I think you'd do really well with this group of Constitution people.
All right. Let me write your phone number down. Hold on a minute, because I see it up on the board. You're coming in on a phone.
Yes. Landline.
Okay. Okay, I'll give you a call maybe right after this call tonight or tomorrow morning. And I'll give you my phone number so that you can reach me. And, see what you can set up. I'm very interested in talking to people and trying to get our message out because... You know, I've said this before, I'll say it again, and I challenge anyone that can, you know, find me to be an error here. There is absolutely zero way to have government by consent. Zero. You cannot have government by consent any other way than what we're teaching here at National Liberty Alliance. There is no other way. And this is the way that our founding fathers did it. And we have to duplicate the way that they did it. They created committees of safety. You know, committees of safety were, you know, when the pilgrims came over, the first thing they organized was committee of safety. They had to have some kind of a government, and it was a committee. The people got together as a committee. They made their decisions and controlled the things that were necessary to control. And that continued in the colonies, even during the time of British rule. And because British rule was a problem, and so it lacked a lot of things that were necessary for a people to continue as a people. And so our founding fathers, you know, their fathers and themselves and even after that, did this by committees of safety. And we controlled the federal government through committees of safety. We control our local governments. We control our, we controlled everything, the courts, everything, through committees of safety. That's what we have to do. And we need to do it in every single county. And that's the only way we're going to save this nation. So,
John, here in Allegheny County, Roslyn is doing an excellent job of recruiting people. So I just want to let you know about Allegheny County here in Pennsylvania.
Okay, great. And, yeah, if you can get me to spend a little time talking to these people, let me know. I can come in. You know, I can come in through Skype. That's the best way for me. But I guess I could do Zoom. I don't have Zoom on this computer yet. I should probably install it for those people who want to use it. I'm, you know, it's pretty simple, I think, if I recall. So, but yeah, you know, whatever we got to do, I'll do it if we can get our message out.
Okay, if I can arrange it, but I haven't been successful yet. But I will let you know. But listen, I have another important question I would do right now. Is I think at one time you had had stated that. Instead of if your constitutional rights are violated, not to go to the state courts, go right to the federal, I guess the federal district court. Could you comment on that?
Well, yeah, generally speaking, it depends. You know, first order of business, if you're being violated in one way or another, the first place you can go, but unfortunately it's not in most places anyway, is your committee of safety, because they can fix the problem. So if it's a bureaucrat problem or so on. Now, if it's a court problem, it's an automatic right to the feds. If you're in a court, no matter what level of court you're in, let's say you're in a town court, a village court, or even a county court, and they violate your right of due process, they take you into jurisdictions unknown, whatever the case may be, that violates one of our unalienable rights, then you're not going to go to the state court to have that solution. The requirement is to go directly. That's the purpose, one of the purposes of the federal courts. One of their major purposes as far as the courts of law is concerned is to champion the rights of the people. That is the key part for the purpose of the federal judiciary. Now, there's two purposes ultimately. One is to protect the people's rights from an overreaching court or whatever the case may be. And the second one, of course, is to govern, judicially speaking, to govern all of the different federal agencies and the agents within those agencies. And that's what those codes are written up for. There are 57 codes, and each one of those codes apply to a certain part of our government. And so, again, people need to understand how this works. And, the other thing in school, children need to understand, you know, how the court system works. They need to be able to take care of their own business. The last thing they should do is hire a lawyer. You know, if they have to hire a lawyer, it should just be for counseling, you know, someone to sit beside and maybe speak on a few things that may be, you know, or assist you, but really just for counseling. That's all you should need a lawyer for. You should know how the court system works. You should know how to do the paperwork. You should know how to protect yourself and maintain control, of your own life. And so that is key, and we need to teach that in school. And that's the other two books that I'm working on. Well, actually, it's going to be broken up in numerous books, I think. Court access and the common law is something that should be taught in school. I'd like to turn that into a textbook, and at some point in hopefully the near future, I'll do that. The other thing is, government by consent. That also is should be taught in school. I mean, that's a curriculum on its own. So I'll break that up into a few different textbooks in order to get, and we're going to try to get them into the schools. And the way we'll get them into the schools is if the people, you know, get involved with what we're doing and see, the importance of these positions, these books that we put together here, and realize that we need to teach our children then they can get, each county can work, each committee of safety within their county can work in all the schools within those districts, okay, to require that these books, these kinds of teaching should be done, textbooks should get into the school to teach our children. It's up to the people to push this, because the government's not going to do it for us, because that only takes more power away from them. And by giving more power to the people, they lose more power. It's harder for them to pull the wool over our eyes if we're no longer sheep. So we have to be shepherds, I guess you would say. And that's where we got to come from.
Yeah, I'm with you, John. However, my weakness is I don't have the I haven't been studying the proper court access procedure like you just explained.
Right.
But here's the more of the general question I wanted to ask you. So if I were to appeal, you know, say I was the guy that wrote the question this evening, but if I was to go to federal court, because I feel that the local magistrate violated my constitutional rights by charging me twice with the same offense.
Okay, well, first of all, you know, we got to be careful, because we don't receive our rights from the Constitution. We receive our rights from God. So, you know, we have to be careful how we couch that in order to make our position clear. You know, they violated my rights protected by the Constitution would be the best way to say it, or your unalienable rights protected by the Constitution. They don't like to hear that word, unalienable, I'll tell you that. I had plenty of comments by judges on that one, but I don't really care. That means they understand what I'm talking about, doesn't it? Let me ask, what court was it? Is it a town court, a village court, a county court? What kind of court is it?
It's a magistrate court. It's two municipal borough and a township, and they have a magistrate.
That's a magistrate is not a judge to begin with. They're now dealing with things that are outside of their powers and authority as far as personam jurisdiction. They don't have personam jurisdiction. So that's the key thing you want to hold, is that they don't have personam jurisdiction over you. And if they don't cease and desist, then you're going to move it to federal court for cause. I also would, you need to take your position. What kind of a problem exactly is this? Give me a little bit of an understanding of the problem without taking it too long.
Okay. They're stating that I have garbage, debris, rubbish, and trash on my property. I do not have garbage, debris, rubbish, and trash on my property. And they also added that I was throwing rubbish, trash, garbage on public property. I don't know where they made this up. These people are political. They're attacking me.
Okay. All right. So therein is your position. And you need to challenge them in numerous ways. Now, if there's a hearing coming up, you should first send a paper in and challenge their jurisdiction, personam jurisdiction. Now, again, as I mentioned earlier, I'm going to get the paper up on that page that I mentioned. It's going to be under education, starts here, come down to law, and then over to court forms and process. I'll put it on that paper, and it'll be traffic court is what it'll be. But that traffic court can be used for any kind of a, you know, violation from a town or a village level, anyone. And the key position is you don't have personam jurisdiction in me. You have no power, no authority. This is not a court of law. I'm not being charged with a criminal charge. And if you're trying to make it a criminal charge, you don't have the power, the authority to exercise or execute any kind of criminal charges against me, because that can only be done in a court of law, and that brings us right to county courts, in New York county courts, state courts, and state courts, and of course, to some degree, federal courts in certain situations. So you need to understand that. What I strongly suggest, this is not going to be till January?
Well, yes, but now the magistrate, we had our hearing with the magistrate. We appealed to the county common pleas court. We got a hearing date. Now the local magistrate sent us another summary trial notice.
Well, that's good. Go there, because what you want to do is, first of all, as soon as I get this paperwork up there and you download it, curtail it around your situation. You can quiz me on some questions next week if you want when you read through this. just on a pointer here or there. But curtail your paper around your situation. It doesn't have to be a traffic situation. Again, it comes back to a code that doesn't apply to you. The bottom line is you're not going to make that argument. You're going to make the argument you don't have personam jurisdiction. A court must have two jurisdictions over you. They have to have subject matter jurisdiction, and they have to have personam jurisdiction. Clearly, they have subject matter jurisdiction, but they clearly do not have personam jurisdiction. So they can't apply this against you, number one. Okay. The other thing is when they hijack you to jurisdictions unknown, which is exactly what they're going to do, and you need to send a copy of the papers, follow the instructions, send a copy of the papers to the quote-unquote prosecutor and for the court. And again, you know, you're going to want to have a quo warranto. I'll write that up too. You know, I got that pretty much all written up. I'll just put it up there where you'll have that in your back pocket with their names on it. Which you want to? Hey, I want your oath, I want your bond, and I want your financials. And you have to do that according to law. The papers are clear. It lays out the federal law, which applies to every court in the United States. So you want that? They got 11 days to respond. And again, you know, when I went into court the last time, I was moving towards the point, I'm not coming back here no more. If this case doesn't shut down, we're going to federal court for violating my right of due process, dragging me into jurisdictions unknown. That's the position and the point you got to get to. Okay. Now, you know, by the time January comes, I think there's going to be a totally new environment, judicially speaking. It's going to, because things are going to be in it's going to be in a strange time, let's put it that way, because I think a lot of the courts, they're not going to know what to do in a lot of areas because things are going to change dramatically, you know, and so you know, it really, that's a good point for you, because I think it's going to be a different environment, you know, it's going to be a paradigm shift coming up, and not only judicially, politically, it's going to be in every way you can think of. You know, a lot of technology over the next year or two that's going to be revealed, that's been hidden from us, I think is going to come into view. Life is going to change tremendously, in my opinion. I strongly believe that.
Well, I'll have to see what happens, and I understand all these what I'm going to have to do here, because I'm behind. I need to study up on these things. I appreciate your feedback, but let me ask you the direct question. So what do you think if I filed, repealed, you know, because they charged me for the same...
No, I would not file an appeal. You're only going to get the same thing. They control the whole system, and why go to them for authority when they don't have authority? No, you tell them they don't have authority. That's your position. That's your argument. We're heading to federal court. You see, and again, we're heading to federal courts, but in my hand, I want a copy of your bond, I want a copy of your oath, and I want a copy of your financials. And that is required by law, which is all written up in the paper. And if they don't provide that, that's another problem for them. The cease and desist, because that's what a quo warranto is. You're acting outside of your jurisdiction, and you continue in that, and you don't produce these things. You're done. You no longer are a judge. You no longer are a magistrate. You no longer hold that position. You're over, out of it. And that's the position you're going to be riding into the federal court with. And you're going to be looking for damages. You have to be, you know, well, that's, you got to have a good wherefore clause in there. Exactly what you're looking for, decease and desist, and this is my damages. And damages is always interpreted in money.
Okay, it's a little bit over my head, but let me just ask you, if I was to go to federal court, do you think they would take this case?
They have no choice but to take
federal it. District court.
No, 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 no. They have no choice to take the case as long as it's couched properly. Remember, the only time they can take a case on is if there is a direct violation of an unalienable right. You're coming in on a due process right. They don't have a choice, and they will hear the case. And it will be at a time, I think, when there's going to be an uproar, an overturn. Everything's turned on its head in the judiciary, especially the federal judiciary, by the time you get into the federal courts, it'll be February. But you do not want to go into a federal court unprepared without the knowledge of how things work. And what I would strongly suggest is this, Did you get the book Court Access and the Common Law?
No, I did not.
I strongly suggest to get it. This is a hardcover book. It's 8.5 by 11. It's over 500. It's almost 600 pages, and it's the maximum thickness for this size book that they allow. And so it's got a lot of stuff in it, just like the court acts, just like government by consent. I see a lot of people putting out books of this type, charging 80, 90, 100 bucks, 120 bucks, even more than that. Okay. I don't know why they charge so much, because I'm very surprised on how much this book costs to really produce, which is not a lot. So I sell this for $39, $39.95, $40, and it's a great book. And I did it in hardcover, even though it costs a little more to make it, and I would have sold the paperback at $39.95 also. But this particular putting it into a hardcover. When I got a copy of this book the first time, I was impressed by the quality of this book, and a hardcover lasts a lot longer. And this becomes a reference book, so you should be going in and out of it a lot, okay? And even the quality of the paper, everything is so superior than what I got through, where I did my other book. But here's what you want to do. You want to get this book, and you want to start reading, start in the table of contents. Just look at the things, for instance, chapter one, the essentials, rudimentary precepts, footnotes, in pro per, license, next friends, two meanings, states, statutes, code, regulations, and rules, court of law, jurisdiction, the author of law. I mean, these are all important positions. Chapter two, the anatomy of a court case, breaks down the filing of the court papers, the federal cover sheet, the action at law, the defendant's answer, the plaintiffs. It breaks everything down. So just to get a view, a view of what you really need to learn, start from the beginning. Recently, maybe some months back, I heard an individual say, and it just hit, truth rings through, And one of the things he says, a lot of people don't read, and he was talking to somebody, if I recall, and they said, well, I don't understand this, or I don't understand this. It doesn't matter that you don't understand something. You should always read beyond your reading abilities. When you get a book and you don't understand a lot of the things that's in it, fine. Read it, because that's the challenge. That's where you'll be. When you go through that book and you use a dictionary to look up the meanings, in this case you use a law dictionary, you can download Black's Law and Bouvier's Law. I got both of them up online here underneath education. And so you look the words up, just understand the meanings. Now, you still may not understand the concept. You may not understand the position that's being made, but that doesn't matter. You're going to get something out of it. And by the time you get to the book, you're going to have a good idea of the framework of and the boundaries of what it is that you're studying. You'll see the boundaries. Now you go back through the book and you use it as a reference book, or you read it a second time. It's like reading the Bible. You read through it the first time, most of it you don't have no clue what they're talking about. By the time you come through the second time, you pick up more. The third time, more. Every time you go through a difficult book, you get more and more as you go through it. And then when you start to, really start to work through it, like using it as a reference book, subject matter, look for this and look for that, it all builds up, and that's how you get your knowledge. So you should take a book on that's over your head, because that's really the way to go. You have to, read books that are that you're, above your level. And that's all the great works are above your level, generally speaking, the average person's level. But that's what we should be reading, and you'll get a lot out of that. Now, anyway, that's where you start, okay, is that and going through the book. And you want to really focus in on your paperwork and how you're going to work this paperwork out. You have to understand the federal court to some degree. And again, I give a lot of information, for instance, on mindset. You have to have certain mindsets, and you have to understand the court you're in. So federal court will not hear anything that is not a constitutional violation. And that's why a lot of cases, I've even talked with lawyers who couldn't understand why they couldn't get their case into a federal court. I mean, that's how dumb they are. You think they would have learned this in school. That's because they didn't make clear right off the top is a violation. And you're going to make very clear that the purpose of this whole court case is for violating my right of due process and any other violation. And then you refer exactly to the constitutional violation where your right of due process is. And that's in the Bill of Rights. So you got to go through, you know, again, you got to just become familiar with how things work. And when you see, for instance, the anatomy of a court case, which is Chapter 2, and you see how this thing works, and you go through this, you're going to say, wow, this is so logical, this process and procedures that we have in our court systems. And it makes a lot of sense. And now you have all these different positions, depending on your case, that you can learn about, you know, estoppel, fraud, you know, injury, you know, all kinds of different things and strategies and positions that you can make and how to defend against different positions. And again, it's all really, you know, when I took my first, what was the name of the course I took? It was an online thing, Jurisdictionary, okay? And we used to refer people to Jurisdictionary. Now I refer people to this book. It's far superior. And it covers the common law position, which is what you want. But Jurisdictionary, when I first took that on, I had to have knowledge, and I needed to get it reasonably quick. So I worked on it over a weekend. I started on a Friday night, and I worked through it all the way through to Sunday. So I got through the whole course. I just consumed the whole course in 3 days, or 2.5 days, whatever it was. And so it gave me a framework of reference. And now I go back into the book and use it as reference. You know, well, they had lots of different PDF things that I downloaded, which creates a book ultimately. And so I was able to then go back and forth, and I started to understand it, you know, I started writing my papers and putting things together and referring back to all the papers that I was learning through the Jurisdictionary, and I started to realize how logical this is and how much sense it makes. You know, you have to become familiar with the language. And I tried, you know, there were some mysteries in Jurisdictionary and puzzling trying to figure it out. I tried to not make mysteries here in this book. And I'll give you an example of mysteries. Working on my computer, for instance, which is a recent situation I had trying to put things together and dealing with Windows 10 particularly, and you go back and you read the instructions, and you got these people that are, you know, savvy the focus of the inner workings of the computer or this, you know, the software or whatever it is you're trying to figure out and understand. But they don't do a very good job communicating that to the average person. It's like they're always speaking to someone who has certain knowledge. And they'll come to a place and they'll say, okay, to do this, go to ABC and then follow this procedure. Well, where the heck is ABC? What exactly is ABC? These are the kind of things I constantly get dropped on. And I tried to be careful to make sure that I don't have any mysteries, leave people in a mysterious area where they don't have enough information in order to understand what it is that they're doing, you know, trying to really come to an understanding of. And that brings me back to the importance of the essentials in Chapter 1, because that lays out that kind of a prerequisite that you need, a mindset, in order to now start working with looking at the anatomy of a court case and then look at the different defenses. And then, you know, you have case examples with strategies and mindsets, motion examples. Talk about punitive damage, which is very important to understand punitive damage, because you can get a lot of money from punitive damage, but you have to understand how that works and how that case has to be put together. And then what needs to be done and lay it out that you're ready for the trial. Read. That is the key to all knowledge. Read. I remember Musk was asked a question by some guy. He said, how is it that you know all these things? Where'd you get? He said, I read books. That was his answer. Musk said that he never really went to college. He got degrees and went to college. Signed up, got into the courses, but he never attended most of the courses. He got the books and devoured the books. He said, I read books. And then he went and took the tests, okay? And he worked his way through college. But one of the key things is, how did you get all this knowledge? How do you know about rockets? How do you know about this? How do you know? I read a book. That simple. No difference here. And this is a lot simpler than rocket science, I assure you.
Hey, John, I want to thank you because you do indeed have a gift and you're willing to share it. And I really appreciate that.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
And
all right.
Let me ask you the other thing I wanted to talk about. On these summary trial notices, they had this term, which I don't think you were familiar with, de novo term.
It's spell that again. I'm going to look
back to the other minor courts.
Yeah, spell that out.
D-E-N-O-V-O.
Okay. Yeah, N-O-V-O. That kind of rings a bell when I look at it written, but I don't know what that is. But by next week when we talk, I will know what that is.
That's why I put into the question. I wanted to find out more about this term. And that's what I think. I thought they did this with me. The Common Pleas Court down in the county sent it back to the local jurisdiction, the magistrate. But they say they didn't do that. So the magistrate just on her own sent another criminal complaint to me.
Yeah, they want jurisdiction over you real bad for some reason or another.
They really do. They've been wanting that for a long time.
You got to take that jurisdiction away from them. And you got to be bold but respectful, okay? At some point, some of the things may be hard to do because you don't know the response of the court. And I understand that. I had a lot of fears of that, too. But I learned a lot of things over time. When you push back in a polite, nice way and you hit the nail on the head, it kind of puts the court into a point of silence. So something is happening there. They I'm hitting them in a way that they've never been hit before, and they're not sure how to proceed themselves. And that's where you want to get, because the problem when I used to go to court was you'd hit with a situation and you're not sure how to proceed. And that takes time and experience and learning and reading and to realize and then come up to this and come up to that, and you formulate a strategy and then you tried another strategy and you work things out. And I'm trying to give people a lot of the strategies I've already worked through. I've puzzled through all these things, and so I've done a lot of puzzling, and that's the key to knowledge, is puzzling through whatever it is you're trying to understand. And then working it out. So I try to flip the whole situation at this point. I go into the court and I bring them to a point of silence. They're not sure what to do or say here. And the only thing they say, well, we're going to put this off. We'll come back next month, because they don't know what to do. But if you're in a lower court, that's not permissible. No, that's not going to happen, because I'm not coming back here again. If you're going to push this and not obey the law and drop this case because you do not have personam jurisdiction, no case was meant to prove that there's personam jurisdiction. You can only rule on what's before the court. You can't rule outside of anything else. What you think your knowledge or opinion is, that's all irrelevant. What's before this court is what you have to rule upon. And I laid out very, very clearly and very simply with plenty of footnotes and facts. You can look it all up in law. You should have done that. Well, I wouldn't say you should have done that already, but, all the footnotes in law, it's all there, okay? And now you want to take, I'm not coming back here. I'm moving this into federal court. I make sure you get your paperwork done before that date, so that now that court is no longer means anything. That's been stopped, and it's going into the federal courts now. And remember,
John,
in federal courts, you don't argue the problem or the situation. It doesn't even come up. You're arguing the fact that there's a constitutional violation here, a denial of due process, and that's the only argument you're going to try. They're going to try to do things because they're dumb. You're going to get you've got a state, people, lawyers on a state or lower level trying to argue in a college level, and they'll be bringing up things they don't understand. They can't bring up, and the judge up there knows that. It's all that's irrelevant, Judge. We're here for one issue and one issue only: violation of due process. They don't have the right of personam jurisdiction. They need to cease and desist, and they injured me, and this is what I want. End the subject. I want summary judgment.
John?
Yeah.
John, I looked up, novo I knew is new, N-E-W.
Okay.
And day is from, so it's from new. It means again.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. That's how they think, that's how they did it. There's a process for them to do it.
There you go.
Okay. right, I got to move on to the next caller, Jim. Let me just speak some more.
Just because it's so important. So you had mentioned that this magistrate, he knows me. He's coming after me, and I think I know why. Because when I ran for school board, they had a chance to meet the candidates, and this magistrate was asking the questions, and I quoted often constitutional lawyer Brent Allen Winters, and that I think that put the fear of the Lord in them. I think they were frightened about me quoting things that Brent Allen Winters has told us.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why they're coming after me. I really believe that.
Well, yeah, because you look at when you challenge their authority, they get the britches and uproar there. They just can't help themselves. You see, I think a lot of these people that are in these powerful positions that are just doing whatever they please. I think a lot of them are social. I mentioned it earlier. Why can't I think of psychopaths or sociopaths, okay? Or even psychopaths. But I think a lot of them are sociopaths. And clearly the people that are pushing this New World Order, they're all sociopaths or psychopaths, every one of them. I mean, that's clear in there, especially the way they're talking now, because they're really up against the wall now. They're a rat trap in the corner, you know? Anyway, look, we'll talk some more next week. I got to move on to the next call. It's getting late.
John, we do miss Brent.
Yeah, I haven't seen him in quite some time. And again, I fell away for a month, and I don't know. So I'll give him a call, you know.
Peace. Good night.
Okay. Thank you. Bye-bye. Okay, let's go to our next caller here. We got someone from Kansas City. What's your first name?
Rhonda.
How you doing, Rhonda?
Okay. I was just going to ask, earlier you had said something about that, if they do not challenge an affidavit. So if they don't challenge an affidavit, it's as if they had accepted it?
Affidavit unchallenged is truth in a court of law. You'll find that all over the place. You'll find it all over my book, okay? Plenty of court case decisions, United States court cases, where the point is made. An affidavit unrebutted rules the court. Remember, a judge cannot rule on things outside of the case. Now, it may be something that they know should be inside the case, but isn't brought into the case, well, then they can't go there. So if the other side is brain dead, you win because they're brain dead. You may be wrong, but you win because they're brain dead and they don't bring up the positions to ultimately debate and challenge your affidavit. So, yeah, affidavit unrebutted rules the court. Period. And no court can go forward without an affidavit. And that's the other thing I should have brought up to Jim. Remember that, Jim. There's got to be an affidavit on the other side, a sworn affidavit. You'll find that 9 times out of 10, maybe even 99 times out of 100, they don't have an affidavit. There is no court. There might be a sworn statement, but it's not notarized. It's not sworn to in front of a judge or a magistrate. So therefore, it's irrelevant. It means nothing. And that's another position made. But go ahead.
Mm-hmm. A verification statement and an affidavit, those are two different things, right?
Well, they use the word verified. Verified, as long as there's a notary in the bottom, that's fine. That's verifying that this is true. It still comes to a sworn statement. Now, I know people, what's very interesting, if people won't swear to something because they say, well, I can't do that because God said I can't, I shouldn't swear. Well, God didn't say that, okay? Basically, you shouldn't just swear about anything, and that is the point. But anything that's serious in a court of law, God speaks about taking oaths and making a sworn statement. Those are okay. You can find Bible verses on that to prove that point. But what I do find is people who are interested in certain things that are outside the Bible or positions in order to make a point to not swear to something are usually people that aren't necessarily students of the Bible to begin with, you know. But anyway, that is a big situation or a problem. Again, a verification is still a sworn statement. Matter of fact, often I would do a paper and call it a verified paper. I forget the particular words I use, but that it's verified. And verified means I'm swearing to it at the end of this paper. At the end of the thing, there's going to be my signature with a notary swearing that this is true.
Okay. I had that verbiage, the verification statement and all, but I didn't have where it would say the signatures to be by a notary and stuff like that.
Then it's hearsay. It's hearsay. It doesn't mean anything. So you have to go back and get your papers notarized, make it a sworn statement. And, you know, and again, if it's a court case against you and there's no sworn statement, there is no case. You know, every IRS case that takes place, every single one, let me repeat that a couple of times, every single IRS case against anyone, there's no sworn affidavit. Never was, never will be. Because they can't swear to what they're claiming, number one. They could go to jail for what they're swearing for. And most of what they say against you, as far as the IRS is concerned, is made up. And it's just they're just writing all this stuff to destroy you. And that's one of the ways to win a court case. You know, where is the sworn affidavit? I've never seen any evidence, any sworn affidavits, sworn statements. Where is it? Without that, there is no court case. It does not exist without a sworn affidavit in it. It has to always start with a sworn affidavit. And a lawyer making statements and swearing on your behalf is still hearsay. You know, that's secondhand knowledge. It's totally irrelevant. Means nothing. Basically, they're just acting as a filter, as a protection between you and the court. So the person who lies to the lawyer, and the lawyer puts out, you know, plays with words as word games and writes it up, they can't go after the individual because even though it's a lies in there or false statements or, you know, things that, however you want to put that, they didn't make a sworn statement in the court. And the judge is acting on information received.
Mm-hmm. And so,
the lawyer is acting on information received from their client. So the whole thing's just a sham. It's a game. And
one
you got
more question.
Yeah.
I didn't hear what you last said. What'd you say?
You got to call them on it. These are all these little things that I'm talking about are big things. You got to call them on. Where's the sworn affidavit? This is hearsay. The lawyer's making this. Where I want that person to get up and swear to these things. This court case cannot continue. There is no sworn affidavit. You see, you make a big thing out of it because it indeed is a mountain. It's not a molehill. It's a mountain.
If I'm the plaintiff and the other side has an attorney, you're saying that when they respond to a complaint, the attorney has to have an affidavit?
No. The attorney shouldn't be making any affidavits. The attorney should be a counselor, maybe articulating the positions. But the point to be made in the case must be done by the person who's making the claim or defending the claim against the claim. So if you make a sworn affidavit and they don't respond to point by point every single thing to rebut it, then whatever they don't rebut stands as truth. And if your next paperwork comes out making the point that the defendant or the plaintiff, whichever, agreed, okay, because they didn't answer. So therefore they agree A, they agree to B, they agreed to E or G. And if you could put that together and say, hey, that's my case. I need a summary judgment. We're done here.
Okay, thank you for your answer. Have a good day.
All right. Okay, we'll take our next caller. We're just going to go a little over. We ran in late starting anyway, so we'll go over a little bit. Next question. Let's see, who is that? That's a wireless caller, 336 area code. What's your first name and your state? You go right ahead.
Bruce.
How you doing, Bruce? What state you calling from?
North Carolina.
Bruce from North Carolina. Go ahead. You got the mic.
I was looking for some of the forms you was talking about, your traffic ticket, your traffic forms.
Okay, you will find that. You're on a phone, you're a wireless caller. Are you coming in on an app? Are you seeing a desktop or no?
I'm sitting in front of my desktop, but I'm talking from my wireless phone.
Okay, so you can see my desktop, right? Because I'm sharing my desktop.
I'm on your website, yes, and I'm
okay.
On, I'm the, I'm
all right. Well, I'll walk you through where it's at or where it will be. And, you know, next time if you want, if you come in with an app or something, you'll be able to see what I'm doing on my desktop. But if you go on to nationallibertyalliance.org and you highlight Education Starts Here, just put your cursor on that, it'll highlight it. Then you come down to Law, and that'll be highlighted. And when that's highlighted, then a bunch of other tabs will open up. And you'll come down to the third one. It says court forms and slash processes. Now, if you don't see that, you have to be a premium member for that page. And again, you know, we have to make money somehow. We don't ask for much, but we ask for $5 a month or more to be a premium member. And so, if you become a premium member, then you'll see that page. It'll say court forms and process. Now, when you come to that page, you're going to find a lot of good stuff here. But the traffic ticket that you're going to be looking for, which can be used for any code violation within your town or village, that I will be posting up this week, that information, and I'll call it traffic something or code violation. The traffic codes or other code violations. And basically, you can take the framework of the paper and just change the information, make it your information, whatever the case is about. But you run through and you write everything up exactly the way it is. And I'll have a strategy page and also other papers to be filed, maybe a quo vanto. And you can quiz me on a quo vanto next week. We talked a little bit about it tonight, but we can talk more about that next week if you want to come on and get into the queue early. As soon as it opens up, get into it early, and we'll talk about a quo vanto.
Okay. I would just like to have some of the forms. And will you have some of the forms, like your paralegal forms?
We have some forms on this page. Now, if you want, I wrote a book called Court Access and the Common Law, and I've got in here all of the most necessary forms. I mean, everything is in form fashion. I mean, you know, you just have to remove the words and replace it with your words. For instance, the names and the defendants, the courts, or the plaintiffs, whatever the names are, you change all that. What the court case is about, that you put your information in with your affidavit. But basically, the forms and everything are laid out for you. You just got to fill in the blanks, so to speak.
Wow. Okay.
And if you get the book, Court Access and the Common Law, which you'll find right here. Matter of fact, right on this page here, on the right side, on every page, pretty much, you see the first book is Government by Consent, and right underneath that is Court Access and the Common Law. And if you click on that, you'll be brought to a page which gives a lot of information on the book and gives you the table of contents, the price, so on and so forth. And then there are links that you can click. And when you click on the link to order the book, another page will open up and you'll be brought to Amazon where you can buy the book.
Okay. Thank you.
And anybody, if you're going to go to court, you need to understand the system. This covers everything, generally speaking, from the federal courts right over to, because it's all the same, a little different, and you'll see the difference as you go along, or you can come back and ask questions. But, you know, anybody that's going to go into court and represent themselves, and I don't even like to say represent themselves, coming in pro per, in your own person, okay? So you're coming in your own person, in pro per. And when you go in, you need to understand what's going on, how the paperwork flows, how to fill out the paperwork, what the paperwork's necessary. This book takes you A through Z. It gives you everything. Now, if you can find another place to get that, that's fine, but you still need the knowledge. And of course, this is from the common law perspective. You know, there's nothing wrong with the court procedures, the process, and a lot of the forms that they have, nothing wrong with that, okay? The problem is they've taken us from common law to civil law, and that's the problem. So you want to come from the position of common law and make the points and lay it out.
Well, I took some tests already with I don't know if you know Sheriff Richard Mack.
Yep, I know Mack.
Well, I took some of his tests, and I passed a lot of his tests, and I became a member of his organization.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and
Well, you should consider start or joining a committee of safety in your county, okay? And if you come back, if you go onto our website and you come up here on a blue bar, you'll see start a committee of safety. And it'll say start here to organize a COS, a committee of safety, and you click on that. And we got books, handbooks, all our books, pretty much all our books are free. They're all handbooks and stuff. Maybe some is on maybe 160, 170 pages, some maybe 40, 50 pages. But they're PDF handbooks. They're all for free. You can get the handbooks that actually will fit in a pocket handbook. You can buy them online for $6-$7, whatever it is, and depending on the handbook. And but you can go through all of this information. And if you go to our directory to discover whether a committee of safety has already been started in your county, all you have to do is click on our directory. And remember, this call is recorded, so you can go to our page on a weekly call, click on that, and you'll find the recording for tonight. So if I'm talking too fast, you can go back and rewind and follow through with all what I'm talking about. But once you click on the directory, and you'll come down and you'll see that there is 10 districts. We break it up, but the key that you want to go to is a little further down. You'll see a states. What state did you say you were from?
I'm from North Carolina. Problem is with North Carolina, we don't have a constitutional court, so we don't have...
Nobody's got a constitutional court. We're opening them back up. They're all civil courts. Every court in America is turned to a civil court. That's a violation against the Constitution. That's our challenge. That's our battle. That's the hill we got to climb and battle up. But let me finish off what I'm saying. When you go to the directory, you highlight directory, and you come and you click on directory, and you come down a little bit, and you click on North Carolina. And when you come to that, you'll see the Committee of Safety leaders and different committees. What county are you in?
I'm in Rockingham County.
Okay, right now there is no Committee of Safety being formed in that county. So if you want to, you can then start it and you can click on it and become someone that's going to start a Committee of Safety. And you don't have to lead it, but you can help start it. And once you get another person to join in with you and you get another person, you start working this out and people will take different positions and you create your committees of safety. We have written a book on how to organize a committee of safety. I think it's about 80 pages. And it's step by step on what to do and how to do it, the total organization and all the necessary paperwork that you have to do, the resolutions, everything that you have to do to put a committee of safety together and get it going. And then that's when you'll start taking control of your local communities, the court systems, everything. This is what you need to learn about. And, everybody does a little of this and a little of that. Everybody puts in a couple hours of work every month, and that's it. Many hands make light work. So the more members you have, the less work that needs to be done by any one individual. But you'll get certain people who will come in and put a lot of time in it and master certain areas, and that's what you need. Those people will pop up. You may be one of those people. I don't know. But we need to get active.
Well, I've been trying to get active and trying to communicate under another name. I'm called Star Child on your website.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, look, when you come in here, if you need some assistance, going back to the directory pages, you'll find that we have district coordinators, okay? And district coordinator for you, you're in District 10. And District 10, you can get the two individuals, a guy named Jeff and a guy named Daryl. Hopefully that's been updated, but if you have a problem with that, getting a hold of those people, or you can always call Jan. Jan's information is up here also on the district page where you can call him. Or you can send him an email, actually, jan@nationallibertyalliance.org, if you need more information to try to contact somebody. Also, we can give you a listing of any people in the county that has joined NLA. And we'll give you a list of people in the whole state. And we'll give you their names, their first names, and their phone numbers. And you can contact other people. So, we'll help you as best we can to help you to find people to organize.
Okay, thank you.
And again, if you read through Starting a Committee of Safety, we got a lot of ideas we've written up on how to find people in your county. Gun clubs is a good place to go. Okay, There's lots of different groups that you can start looking for within your county that are into really that would be really good to work on these things because they're interested in liberty. So anyway, okay.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. All right, we'll take our next caller. Jay, how you doing from North Carolina? Here's someone from North Carolina right now. Jay.
Hey, John.
How you been?
Did you put that letter that you beat the IRS with on the website yet?
No, I haven't yet. I'm kind of holding off on that. If you need a copy, I can send you a copy. You know, I'm a target as it is, as I'm sure you know. Okay, and you know, if I put those papers up there, I'm concerned about it right now. But if you want a copy, I can send you a copy.
You know my email, right?
I'm pretty sure I do offhand.
Punk ass.
Well, you got my email. Just send me an email and say, hey, John, as of last night or whatever, you know, can you send me A, B, and C, and I'll get it to you. All right?
I got the state of North Carolina coming after me for taxes.
Well, that's an interesting thing that the state, wow, because they usually let the feds do that. They don't have a leg to stand on at all. I haven't taken anything paperwork from the perspective of the state, but if they're coming out after your taxes and you try to, well, we need to talk a little bit about it. I don't understand. Usually they'll try to come out with paper, but they won't really come out after you to go through the courts. Because there's nothing for them really to put together to really do it. The IRS, you know, they don't have a problem with lies because they're the master of lies, and they're very well protected, so they can say and do anything they want and get away with it to some degree.
I kind of like to talk to you about the whole situation, you know, off the call.
Yeah, but, give me a call during the week if you want. You got my number. Matter of fact, that's probably the best thing to do. Just call me during the week. Not tomorrow. Tomorrow's not a good day, but, you know, any other time.
Okay. You know the Constitution of North Carolina says life, liberty, the fruit of your labors and happiness.
Well, I know the Constitution said the pursuit of your pursuit of happiness, but, yeah, the pursuit of the fruit of your labor. That's interesting.
Yeah. The North Carolina Constitution says life, liberty, the fruit of your labors, and the pursuit of happiness.
Well, you can also use the federal constitution, of course, because that applies in every court of the nation. But the key thing is you go into where there are no direct taxes. It's that simple. And when they'll say, well, then there's the 16th Amendment, there are Supreme Court cases that said the 16th Amendment did nothing more than make it more clearer. It didn't give them the power, the authority to tax income, because income on the people. It's only on the corporations that they can go in after. So.
Well, and my labor is just an even trade, isn't it? My time for money.
Well, once they tax labor, you become a slave, don't you? You're a slave at that point. You're working for someone else, and you're slaving for someone else, even though they're allowing you to have something so that you can feed yourself. Look at it. If they want to, the game that they play, and I never made this argument in court, but I could have made this argument, but I wouldn't do it these days anyway because there's stronger arguments to be made. But the bottom line, ultimately, if you wanted to make the argument, and you can make this argument with these people too to some degree, is that, you know, look at, if you go into the thing and you're calling me a corporation and you're claiming that I'm a corporation, well, a corporation has write-offs. Everything I eat is a write-off. My housing is a write-off. And since I spend almost my entire salary as a write-off, I have nothing to claim as a tax. See? So that's an argument you could be made, and I don't know of anyone that has ever made that argument, but it'd be interesting to see how they try to, you know, argue against that, because they're coming out after you as a corporation, and they're making you that block, caps of your name and stuff, identifies you as a corporation. So that's, again, an argument you can make, I could make on the state level. But the key thing here is no direct taxes. That's simple. Where do you have the power, authority to tax anything? I'm not your slave, and the Constitution says you can't do it, and the 16th Amendment is null and void, first of all, because it was never ratified, and there's a guy that wrote a book on this. We got the papers up on our site of all the papers showing it was not ratified, so you can get that down also. But the bottom line is, beyond that argument, it's probably under education somewhere. It may be, let's see if I can know.
I just got away from the site because I went and ordered that book off Amazon. Hang on, let me click
back. Okay. I don't know offhand, but when we talk, I'll try to find it for you. Okay.
Okay.
But it is, we do have that information on our site. It may be under court cases where I put it, because we may have brought it up into
court. Under federal court cases?
It's possible that it could be under there somewhere. Uh-huh. Could be in a memorandum form. I don't know. I don't remember. But the key thing is the United States Supreme Court has ruled numerous times that the 16th Amendment never gave them power to tax an individual's labor. They can't do it. And that's clear. So you have the no direct tax, you have the explanation of the 16th Amendment, and you can also lay out the fact that it was never ratified. So it doesn't even exist. The thing is garbage. And
I've got to the end of the month to take care of this, but I'm not going to be home till like the end of the month.
Yeah. Well, read what you can, get yourself educated, talk to me on the phone, and see what I can do to help you out with some things and throw some paperwork towards your way. And remember, this is going to take a while anyway. And you could push for a later date. I'd push for as much as you can. You could say, hey, look, I'm going to be on the road all month. And I'm a truck driver, and so I can't. This doesn't allow me enough time to do what I got to do. So I need an extension. How much time do you need? I need 90 days. We'll be well into the end of devolution. We'll have played out pretty, and we'll be at the point of really educating the people everywhere. We'll be educating the people on what took place and what has been happening in America over the past 100 years, and how these people have come in and created the deep state. Well, people's really going to get a hell of an education soon, because it's going to be everywhere.
Would you call them, or would you just deal with paperwork?
Well, I would start off with a call, try to do it on a call. They may ask, well, okay, yeah, that's fine. Just send me a letter and make those points, and we'll get another date. But, yeah, I'd start off with the phone call. You may be able to get away with just a phone call. And you're going to want to talk with the judge, so you call the clerk up and ask, if you'd like to talk with the judge for that case, because you're looking for an extension, because you're a truck driver and you're going to be on the road, and you can't put a case together.
Well, what they did was they sent me a letter that said I had to respond within 30 days, but I didn't see it within 30 days, so it was long past.
Well, that's, you make your phone call and let them know. And then
sent me a letter saying I owe them this much. I owe them $6,000 by the end of the month.
Yeah. Well, look, at one of the big arguments that you can make against them is they have to have proof of a claim. And a proof of a claim requires someone to put their John Hancock down on a sworn affidavit. They will not do that. No. No, none of these people will do that. Because they all know it's a bunch of fraud, it's a bunch of BS. And the other thing is, and where did they get that information from? How did you get that information? There's another form that requires them to give a sworn affidavit that they have power and authority over you. So there's form 4490, I think it is, and form 56. One of them, I think 4490 is the fiduciary authority, and I think 56 is the proof of claim, or, reverse that, whichever. But form 4490, form 56... where did you get the fiduciary authority to talk to my bank or to do this or do that? Where did you get this information from? The other thing is the individual that's making the claim, either them or their boss has an oath. I want a copy of your oath, I want a copy of your bond, and I want a copy of financials. And now after that, we're going to talk. You see, you got to intimidate them. You got to bring them to positions and points that they won't know what to do. And there is no solution for them, ultimately. There is no solution other than to just ignore you. And the more they ignore you, that's more proof against them. And so everything you do, you want to do by paper, and you want to do under sworn affidavits, certified. I communicated with the IRS the many times I battled those people out, and I always communicated with sworn affidavits, verified, you know, I just verified it, and I also always certified everything, return slip, and all that stuff. But you want to start first with on the phone, and they may just automatically say, okay, look, we'll give you 90 days, we'll send you a paper to let you know when your date will be, period. And that's fine. Then. Now you start working on your strategies and your education.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just ordered the court access book we're talking. So.
Again, that is going to be really the big thing of understanding how the courts work and how the paperwork works. And I tell you, just by reading through it like a book, it's just going to open your eyes, and you're going to have a real good basis of understanding of what's going on here. And then you start using it as a reference book to write your papers, to make your strategies, to, you know, and work things out. So.
Okay, well, it's getting late, and now
I got one more call I want to get to. So.
Okay.
All right, I'll talk to you, Jay. Thank you. Okay, let's take our last caller. It's Cara. Cara, what state are you from? 270 phone, area code. You got the mic. C-A-R-A. Okay, go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay.
What's your first name?
My name is Josh. I'm calling from Kentucky.
How you doing, Josh from Kentucky? Go right ahead.
I'm doing well. I guess a lot of stuff is somewhat it's been discussed and answered a little bit. So I guess to just recap the name of the book, I am looking for some more forms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you go to our website, nationallibertyalliance.org, and on the right-hand side of our website, it's pretty much almost on all papers. So I'll go to the right now on the welcome page, which is the first page on the website. You look to the right, you'll see Buy the Book. And the first book available is Government by Consent. And it gives you a little information.
That.
If you click on that, you'll get details on the book. Underneath that is another book. It says hardcover book. Click here for details and to order the book. It's Court Access in the Common Law. So click on that. And then give you a lot of information. So you can breeze through this information. You can look at the table of contents. And you can read, I think, the preface. The preface, you can click on the preface and read the preface. And it's not clickable here. Maybe I got it written down on the bottom, but that should have been a clickable link. I'll have to fix that. Let me scroll down the bottom to see the preface. Click here to order books, but okay. All right, I'll have to put the preface in there so you can read through it, because it gives you a really good, powerful idea of the book. But in any event, the table of contents will do the same thing. And if you decide to buy the book, there's a couple of links. The first link right on top says click here to order the book. You click on that, and you'll be taken to Amazon, and you can order it right there. I got Kindle for $3. And, you know, that's amazing. I see people selling a book for, let's say, $45, okay? And then you'll get the Kindle, they'll charge $40. I mean, that's ridiculous. Almost the whole thing is profit on that. By the way, okay, you know, Amazon only makes a couple of bucks on it. I charge $3.99 for that book to sit down and listen to it as just being read to you. And that's another good way to get the book. The footnotes aren't in that, although it is on the end, but I took the footnotes out so it could be just read as a book. So if you wanted to put it on to, you know, get the Kindle and put it on in your car or when you're doing some mindless thing, work or something, you play it. You can really get a lot of information that way and kind of embed it into your brain. But anyway, the hardcover book's only $39.95, $40. So.
Yeah, great. And that's the one that's got the forms in it.
Got everything, yes, lots
like.
Of forms,
yeah.
yes.
That's awesome.
There's plenty of other forms. You know, forms are basically, the idea of a form is someone's written a paper and to do something, whatever the case may be, and basically they lay that, you know, over time they've laid these things out as a form so that, you know, it's helpful and keeps people on point is what it does. We do all our forms from the perspective of the common law, so that's key. And our forms have footnotes, so that's key. So our language is a little different. It's common law as opposed to civil law.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm looking for. So one particular question about an affidavit, and I've got a local district judge that's asking me for a brief, and I don't particularly, I haven't stepped into their jurisdiction, and I don't intend to.
Is this a case against?
It's just a traffic violation, a speeding ticket.
I'm going to have positions and paperwork on traffic violation, but I'm doing an updated one, and eventually I'll update the book. But I'm doing an updated one. It's already done, actually, and a lot of people have wanted that, and you can use it for numerous code violations. But it's written particularly for a traffic violation, and you just have to change the things for your state. And your name.
I heard you saying that.
Yeah. So that'll be, you'll find that. Hold on a minute. If you come to our website, nationallibertyalliance.org, your highlight education starts here. You come down to law, and you highlight law, and then you come to the tabs that open up under that, and you click on court forms and process.
I wrote that fast enough.
That has all of the forms that we do offer at this point, and I'll be putting traffic up here soon. Now, if you don't see that page, you have to be a premier member to see that page, and a premier member is someone who supports National Liberty Alliance with $5 a month or more. So it's give up a cup of coffee and a donut or something once a month, and that's your donation to us.
Yeah.
Give more? That's how we live, by that particular little bit, that the widow's mite, so to speak. A couple of pennies from everybody, and we're able to pay the bills.
Well, I really appreciate it. I've been following you guys for quite a while. Yeah, I've been battling the IRS,
I'll have some strategies up there also on the traffic thing. So, it'll all be in one traffic court, and give you the paperwork and the quo warranto and a little bit of a strategy and move to court to federal court for cause and so on. You still should get the book, because the book's going to give you an understanding and an appreciation and an understanding of how the court system works. And
if they proceed, I've already had two hearings, and I've stood before the judge already, and
don't need to stand before the judge anymore once you get this information.
Right. I'm kind of leading them on, actually, but I want them to. It's really kind of more for my experience, and I don't mind that they, you know, step on my toes right now, because staging this for their.
Whenever I get a ticket, which isn't too often anymore because I got a really good radar detector, but in any event, whenever I get a ticket, I send a paper in. Half the time, I never hear back from the court again. The other half that I hear back on, I used to just say, I just paid a fine. That's it, because I don't get time. But I decided not to pay no more. And I only go to court once. Only go to court once. When I go to court, they're going to dismiss or we're heading to federal court, and I want their bond, I want their oath, and I want their financials. And they got 11 days to do it, and I serve them with a quo warranto, which is cease and desist all activities in whatever jurisdiction or anything you have until you produce these records. You don't produce them, you don't have anything in here. And if once you have their oath and stuff, and they violated their oath, now they're going to give up their position. Now, you see, they got to run into a lot of problems once you push that issue. And at that point, they're probably going to want to get away from that. Hopefully just dismiss the case, and everybody goes home, and we're done.
So with the affidavit, because I don't want to file anything in your court, I just want to serve an affidavit, I guess, is that, and when
no,
we do
no,
that...
No. What you do is a verified paper challenge in jurisdiction. You're not going to give them an affidavit going into the details of the court case and how you got the ticket and what this was for. You're not going to get into anything. Bottom line, judge, you don't have... In order for a court case to go through, and we've got all this
right.
laid out on the paperwork, in order for a court case to go through, you have to have both subject matter and personam jurisdiction. Now, indeed, you do have... Yeah.
So isn't that what the affidavit is going to basically state?
No.
Is that they don't have...
You're going to do a verified paper challenging jurisdiction. And that's in... Verified is an affidavit form. Okay? So
okay. That's what I mean then, I guess.
Yeah, it's an affidavit form. It's about 4 pages, I think. And basically what you're telling them on the paper is you don't have... You may have subject matter jurisdiction because this is a commercial thing and your court doesn't have the ability to deal with commercial, which is equity, dealing with people in commercial activity. I'm not in commercial activity. You don't have, therefore, you don't have a personam jurisdiction.
Right. And that's where we are. That's where we've left it. She's just asking for paperwork. And I'm going to give her this.
This will clear it all up for you. It will clear it right up. And I want to tell you, you know, last time I went to court with this, I can see both the judge and the prosecutor, they were very nervous about this whole thing. Continence has changed. Started to talk about breaking the law and violating 2 years in jail. A judge can get 20. Let me tell you, all of a sudden, they don't even know what to think, do, or say. Because it's right there. It's in the paper, very clear, on the paper. You know, you got the footnotes with the reference points and the law. It's all there.
And if I email you, I told them, they tried to give me 60 days to do this. I told them I only needed 15 because I pretty much had my own written out. And then they said, well, do you need 30 days to be fine? I said, well, no, 15 is good. She said, do you need 60 days? That's all. She kept trying to push it off. So.
Yeah, that's okay. Let them. You want more time. You can respond in 10 days. You're done. But, more time is better. The paperwork is very powerful, in my opinion, but you also have to articulate your point in a court. And if you catch them by surprise, you're in a courtroom with a whole bunch of people there, they really don't know what to do. Because
She shut me. Yeah, that's what happened. She shut me down. I explained. I just told her. I said, "Well, we can't do anything. The judge has run over me, and continued to proceed without personam jurisdiction. I'd already challenged this. I objected to you pleading innocent. You entered a plea for me, which was against my consent." And I objected to all that. It's all on video. It's all on record. I said, so at this point, Your Honor, I'm needing some response from the court whether or not where you're standing is, because the plaintiff, which is just a citation, and the officer, which is not a sworn statement, they don't have standing. If the plaintiff does not have jurisdiction, then the court doesn't have jurisdiction.
The court doesn't have jurisdiction, period, because they're acting in equity. You know the difference? They're acting in equity. Equity has nothing to do with you.
And I explained that to her. And I didn't have to really explain it in detail to her. We are in Kentucky. It's a commonwealth. And she admitted, I said, Your Honor, you realize I have a constitutional right to stand back into my common law. And she said, right. I said, okay. I said, and so don't have a contract with the city.
They say one thing but act another way. But that language with a contract with the city or anything, I wouldn't even get into that language. You know,
I told her that it didn't exist. And she said, and I know you're probably going to say my driver's license. See, I was the last person in the whole court proceeding thing, so they – processed all these people, and I got to hear them all go through the process. So
I like the audience, because the audience is really very helpful. The judge is there realizing there's a whole bunch of people listening to all this stuff.
There was three officers. There was about two or three prosecutors and two or three clerks that were left in there, but
they all think they run the show and that you're gonna have to bend to them and you're gonna pay no matter what. They all think that, so they probably aren't even listening, and the lawyers don't even understand. I mean, I can't believe they have been so their minds have been so destroyed by their education that they haven't got a clue on what we're even talking about. But the judges generally should know, with the exception you're in a town court probably, and they don't know either. So, but yeah, in any event, you want to serve everything on a prosecutor, and you want to send one into the court, and you want to have extra copies when you go there. They say, well, I haven't seen it. We don't, where is it? Yeah, well, here, I got the copy for you, Judge, you know, whatever the case may be.
Okay, so and that's really what I guess I need is who do I serve this on? I know it's the judge. I know the prosecutor.
You can get the prosecutor's name and address by calling the clerk.
Yeah, I've got the judge in it, but okay.
Yeah, you might even find in paperwork, you might find it. I doubt it, but you might find their name in the paperwork. I don't know.
I need the officer?
Huh? No, the officers are irrelevant. You know, there's no argument with that person. You know, that's another way to shut a case down. You say, by the way, is the officer here? No, he couldn't show. Well, you know, you got to shut the case down altogether.
Yeah, they didn't do that.
Oh, yeah, that's another violation, isn't it?
Oh yeah.
So again,
they're racking up violations. But the Quo Ronto, I'm interested in that.
If you end up having to take it to federal court, let me tell you something. You can't give these people an inch because they'll take 1,000 miles. I'm telling you right now. You know, I have been into cases when we were trying to figure these things out and puzzling out strategies and, well, this time we'll do this and this time we'll do that. I have literally been involved in cases with people where we would go to court literally 5, 6, 8 times. You know, well, we're gonna have to extend this, come back. It just goes on and on and on, okay? I end all that. It's done. The Quo Ronto ends all that. And the bottom line, Your Honor, if I'm leaving here, I'm not coming back because I'm moving this court into the federal court, and I'm going to seek damages there for violating my right of due process. That in itself should get their attention, and that should end the case. And if it doesn't, then fine. Now you're going to make money.
Yeah.
That's my attitude anyway. Go to court and make some money out of it.
How do I get that? You haven't uploaded it yet, the traffic codes.
Well, look at
on
your ticket, there'll be a number, a traffic code number, and it'll probably say traffic, but in any event, you look that code violation up. Okay, here in New York.
Oh, no. I know all that. Yeah, no, I meant you said that you had a verified affidavit or...
Yeah, it's a verified response to the ticket.
Yeah, and that's so to get your version of that.
Yeah, I'm gonna post that.
So will you post it before the 15th by chance? Well, see, I need it before the 15th because I need to get it.
Well, I'm gonna try to post it tomorrow or the next day, and I'll post it up under Education Starts Here, and come down to Law, where was it, the Law, and then you go to Court Forms and Process. And again, if you don't see that, it's only because you're not a Premier member. You have to be a Premier member for that.
Yeah, I used to be. I'll sign back up and get going. Something kicked me out, and I just haven't ever done that. So I'll do that and I'll get that, and this will be. I'll report back and let you know how it goes.
Yeah, remember, a Premier member is just giving up a cup of coffee and a donut or a bagel once a month. That's it. That's all there is to it. And anybody who's listening could help support us by doing that, whether they need that page or not. But look at anybody who's not educating themselves in the law. One day you're going to be stuck in a situation, you're going to have to try to you're either going to have to spend a lot of money and get a lawyer. Or really get hardcore down on studying so that you can come to an understanding to be able to deal with the problem yourself. So everybody should know that this is education. Anybody who's an American citizen, anybody, and I have no problem with the word citizen. Our founding fathers never had a problem with that. They used it 7 times in the Constitution. I'm a citizen of a natural law republic. That's what I am. And And so I don't make that argument at all. They tried to play games with the word. It's a word game, and that's where they go, and it's all about fraud, and that's what I call it. It's a fraud. So once you call it what it is, they don't even want to go there no more. But the bottom line, though, is that you're coming in and you're going to make your position, and you need, as one of the people, as a person who loves liberty, and because liberty is understood in the law. The law and liberty, the blessings of liberty comes from the law. That's where it comes from. And you should know your heritage. Your heritage is that liberty that you receive, that blessings of liberty that you receive is your heritage. So if you should know about your heritage, the power and the authority of your heritage. You should know how you got it, what it is, where it comes from, what does it stem from, and how can you use it? How can you exercise it? How can you protect yourself? People need to know these things, but they don't. And it's only because they fail to teach us, because they want to hide this, so they keep us as good slaves. You know, the key to keeping a slave is keeping them ignorant. That's why you couldn't teach a slave back many years ago. You couldn't teach a slave to read and write. It was against the law, because that creates a problem for them. They don't want an educated slave. They want an ignorant slave. So we're ignorant slaves. We may read, but we're not reading the right things. We should be reading the great works. We should be reading the Federalist Papers. We should be reading the Constitution. We should be reading the books that I've written. We should be reading the books that others have written. We should read in the books that Brent Allen Winter's written, Common Law, The Excellence Of. I mean, this is what we should be spending our time with. People should be reading a half hour, an hour a day at minimum. You know, I'm in hours every day, many hours every day, researching and studying, and the more you read, and the more you study, and the more you research, the more understanding obviously has to come from it. There is always a benefit from that. The benefit is knowledge, and knowledge is power. You know, so that's what it's all about. So we all have the wrong powers. Let's get the right powers. Let's take control. Let's put these people back under our thumb. Put them under the back of them, chain them down with the chains of the Constitution. How does Jefferson put it? I think he put it, bind them down with the chains of the Constitution. I think that's how he put it. So that's what we need to do. And when you go into a court of law and start bringing these things up, they're being caught from left field. They have no clue on how to respond often enough. And that's power. And at the bottom line, at the end of the day, hey, listen, I'm not coming back here no more. You want to give me another date? We're not going to go with that, because I'm going to write a paper and we're going to move this into federal court. We'll take our case there, and I'm looking for damages. It gets them thinking, because they don't know what to do. And that quo warranto at that point has to be coming up right before you even say that. It gives them 11 days. That's the law. The law gives them 11 days to respond to that, or they give up their position. So that's power. Press it and let it be known. You know, you could let it be known. Look, read the law. 11 days. If you don't respond to this quo warranto within 11 days, you no longer are a judge. You can't. You know, that's kind of pushy. I don't know whether you want to push it that far. But the paperwork clearly pushes it anyway, because the law is written in there. So it's in the footnotes. And shame on them if they don't put the power of the footnotes. And that's the other thing people need to learn is there's so much in footnotes, you know, and you don't really look at some of the footnotes and say, well, here's his supporting paper. It's in a case here, and here's the number. That's fine. And in some cases, you might want to look up, but that's powerful. But sometimes footnotes gives an understanding of a word or a phrase. I know in my paperwork it does, in my books it does. And so those footnotes, you want to kind of look at them and see. But, you know, as you're reading through, maybe the first time you read through the book, maybe you won't read the footnotes. The second time you read through the book, maybe you'll look at the footnotes then, you know. But, you know, just because it's written down doesn't make anything so, and that's key. And that's why I put thousands of footnotes in my book. Books, plural. All right, with that, I got to bring us to an end. We're way, way overboard, and I appreciate the call, and maybe we'll talk again.
Thanks, Sean.
Thank you. Okay, with that, we'll end our program. Thanks, everyone, for coming. Lord willing, we'll see you next Monday. Hopefully, you'll come and bring people. Look, we need to grow. We need to build committees of safety. We need people to get educated. We need people to get involved. And if you're not doing that, than when we're not doing our duty. And then we deserve what we get. You know, ignorance is bliss until the hammer comes down. Good night, everybody. Godspeed.